Okay, it's episode 17, everybody. Episode 17 of Chapo Trap House, coming to you a little bit later in the week than you're used to. But that is because we had to get our special guest on for this week's show. We're joined by, let's just jump right into it, we're joined by Robbie Suave of Reason Magazine and The Daily Beast. Robbie, what's going on?
Thanks for having me. Cool to talk to you guys.
Yeah, it's me, Will Meneker, and you're also on with Felix Biederman.
Hello.
And Matt Chrisman.
Sup?
So, yeah, again, thanks for coming on. I want to thank you especially for coming on because so far on the run of this show, all of our guests have been sycophants or members of Chapo Sea Org. These are people who don't dare disagree with us or even look us in the eye for fear of swift retribution. So, again, thanks for coming on and helping us take the show in this bold new direction.
Well, but how do you know I'm not, I'm probably just like a secret leftist plant at the organizations I work for. And I'm going to keep up that charade for this interview anyway.
Oh, you know, it's like what Ocelot says in Phantom Pain. He goes, yeah, she could be a spy, but maybe I'm a spy, or maybe you're a spy. Or what Arnold says in Total Recall, when he goes, if you're you and I'm me, then who the hell am I?
Get ready for the big surprise. You are not you. You're me. No shit.
And that really gets to the root of the problem.
One of the great existentialist texts of our time. But, Robbie, welcome to the Bernie Bro Therapy Hour. This is what we do on the show. I know you've listened before, but basically this is a safe space for alpha male brocialists to yell our feelings about having our beautiful Bernie be cheated out of the presidency.
My beautiful boy!
Be cheated out of the presidency by a goddamn woman.
How could they do that to him?
I have been called an honorary Bernie Bro of the libertarian movement, just so you know.
How is that possible? How are you an honorary Bernie Bro of the libertarian movement?
I have written that there was a libertarian case for Bernie, especially as opposed to all other candidates of either party or political persuasion, on the kind of the basis of his foreign policy being less muscular than virtually everyone else.
Right, but I saw recently you've hopped aboard the Gary Johnson train. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, now that we have our actual like libertarian guy, I'm not a fan of his terrible lack of charisma when he's presenting his ideas, but I like the guy.
Whoa! Did you not see the town hall on CNN? That was electric shit. Him and Bill Weld looking like a couple of your uncles getting drunk on the porch. It was riveting.
Drunk or high or whatever else, and my expectations for this thing were so low, like they were, you would not believe how low they are, and he still did not even come close to meeting them, so I was bummed. But
Robbie, the reason we invited you on the show is because a couple weeks back you wrote an article at the Reason blog that cited the show that was sort of based on something. It was actually something I said on the show. And this was about the Peter Thiel Gawker case. And the headline of the piece was, if a left-wing Peter Thiel sued a right-wing Gawker, liberals would cheer. They said so. And I was the person saying so. So that's. I guess I'd like to begin by bringing this up. You write in the piece... if a left-wing version of Peter Thiel was using his billions to fund lawsuits against the right-wing news organizations, some liberals wouldn't utter a word of criticism. Worse than that, they would cheer this development. They're even admitting it. And that's when you get into what I said. And I saw I was responding to a tweet you did stating just that. And I took it to heart, and I decided to admit rather than play along and devote myself to the principle of freedom of the press and that billionaires shouldn't use lawsuits to tinker with freedom of speech or journalistic outfits they dislike. I decided to keep it 100 and just say flat out that I basically wouldn't care if someone bankrupted the Weekly Standard or National Review. And I will note that my co-host basically disagreed with me. And... I guess what I want to ask is, I admitted as I was saying it that I'm being hypocritical. So I have no complaints to the anything that you presented in the article, but I guess I just want to ask you, why does this hypocrisy on my part matter in your opinion? Because it seems like a small one to me.
I mean, it doesn't matter in the sense that it's your opinion and you're entitled to it, and I think it's a fine opinion, and I applauded your consistency. But I was more talking to my people who read me, people who I interact with on Twitter, who, you know, care about free speech and are care about it regardless of which side it's affecting more. I thought this was an interesting example of, the importance of free speech to the left and all that, and this was an example where, I mean, I've criticized the ACLU for some kind of things where, well, I think this is a civil liberty you should be protecting, and they're not really doing it, so I like to point out things like that, I guess. I get what you're saying, and that's fine that, you know, organizations that don't represent your views and that you think are doing bad things, and I have plenty of criticisms of National Review and the Weekly Standard my own, should be, you know, it would be kind of better if they just didn't exist. I'm worried about what happened to Gawker too, even though I don't like them very much. So I'm worried about living in that world. And I'm a libertarian. I like to be principled and consistent about it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And I guess if there was any point of disagreement, really, in the article you wrote, it comes in a sentence where you say, after you quote me, you said, "It's refreshing to see such honesty, I suppose." And the sentence I would take issue with is when you said, "Libertarians don't believe the legal system should be set up so that rich people can use it to censor speech that they dislike." And is that true? Because to me, it doesn't seem like libertarian politics. I would be opposed to a legal system in which rich people could censor speech they don't like.
I think some... It depends how you're defining libertarians. I mean, some people you might define as libertarians probably would be okay with that, including, like, Peter Thiel, who at some point in some way kind of described himself as a libertarian. I don't really think he is a libertarian. I mean, he's a Trump backer now, and Trump is not a libertarian. So, but yeah, I guess I was talking about myself and, like, the people that I'm letting in the libertarian club, as narrowly defined as that is.
Okay, oh, well, I see it's our old friend, No True Scotsman. Hello.
Sure.
So, well, to that end, I mean, how do you define a libertarian? Who are you letting in the club?
I'm not a dogmatic sort of, you have to agree that all aggression is wrong. I'm just think government should be limited in most ways and better, smaller in most ways than we have it now is how I define libertarianism. No sort of philosophical, you have to accept this or think this. It's just kind of thinking that the world is usually better off if we have less government coercion in our lives.
Private coercion is 100, though. Trill is AF.
Yeah, I mean...
Often they use the government to bring about that coercion. Then what Peter Thiel's doing is, like, a good example of that. Or abusing the quasi-governmental legal system, or whatever you want to call it.
But, you know, in a libertarian politics in which there is the scope of the government is reduced, or we have less government, there's less government regulation and oversight of things, doesn't that sort of naturally, into that vacuum, is filled by private actors who would see their reach and scope of power increase in the absence of a strong federal government? So
but I don't really know if that is true. I mean, certainly it'll be true some of the time, but I mean, I'd see lots of cases where the existence of regulation just makes it possible and easier for very powerful private interests to kind of steer that regulation in favorable ways to them. So having much more regulation and much more oversight, I mean, it's still being handled by people who are in the pockets of powerful, wealthy interests, private interests. So, I mean, that's a problem too, I guess. You know, I mean, we're talking in, like, very broad, philosophical, libertarian versus non-libertarian sort of. I mean, this is not, like, a specific thing, but...
I mean, I guess, like, not broadly or abstractly, but I think practically speaking, I think where, you know... My problem with the libertarian worldview is that, I mean, aside from the fact that I think it's kind of a niche brand of just the right-wing worldview, which I dislike for a lot of reasons, but it's this idea that it is, in its sort of monomaniacal focus on government coercion. It seems to purposely occlude every kind of private coercion that takes place in a free marketplace, like, you know, the relationship between an employer and an employee, or contractual relationships, for instance, which involve all sorts of coercion, and I would argue meaningful abridgments of freedom of speech and even the press as well.
When you're probably one of those people who thinks that the very existence of property is kind of like a issue, is coercion to some people, right? The pure sort of argument.
I mean, not 100%. I mean, Matt Brunig can make that argument. I can see where the argument's coming from, but I'm not like a purist on that regard. But yeah, like everything, I think the point is everything involves a little bit of coercion, but it's just a question of what you regard as just or not.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's correct. But I think, so the government sphere of coercion is the one that I'm kind of like more directly responsible for, I guess, because we're in a democratic society where the government is what we all do together, because we have to, and it's kind of a different, to me, category of coercion than private coercion, which can also be a problem, and often I think because of how they use the government for it. But I guess that's where the focus is. Like, this is the entity that is supposed to be that I'm actually forced to pay for to, you know, take care of my defense and my other needs and so on and so forth. So if it's violating people's rights and it's doing bad things and it's leading to a less harmonious society, that's kind of the entity where my focus has to be. It's the one I'm responsible for. It's the one.
But what's the distinction, though? I mean, isn't none of this private accumulated wealth or property that we're talking about could exist in the absence of government? And even if you reduce the sphere of government, no libertarian that I know of calls for the government sphere to be reduced to the size that it no longer exists to maintain those relationships.
Well, I don't really. Well, I'm not saying the government should not exist. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that I think most things it should be less involved in because that would be better. Is sort of my very, very broad kind of claim here.
Okay, well, what's probably like the most important area of which the government you think would have a more positive effect on our society if the government were less involved in?
The education system, the kind of drug regulations, I think even infrastructure. I think policing, it could be less involved. I'm talking about like the federal government.
So, like, are you saying that those things should be taken over by the private sector, or they're better handled by local or state government?
Yeah, I'm saying the more centralized federal government should be less involved in those things, and they would be better. I think the education system would clearly be better if administered by private. I mean, we kind of have proven that over and over again, that government-managed education is a horrid failure.
How so? You mean like the public school system in America has been a horrid failure?
Yeah. It has no shortage of financial resources, and it has bad incomes.
Yeah, because we have massive fucking poverty in this country that vastly negatively affects the ability to learn. That's been pretty well documented, too. I mean, we have sort of an unprecedented in the first world level of poverty, and that is the degree to which the public schools are a failure is the degree to which we're dealing with a massive degree of poverty, that because public schools can't choose their pupils the way that charters or whatever can do, ends up absorbing the vast number of people who are failed by not the public education system, but by the fact that they live in incredibly destabilizing poverty that absolutely hinders their ability to learn.
I mean, I don't disagree with that. Poverty is that's a horrible problem that is definitely keeping public schools from being successful, but I think it's also that they're run by, bureaucrats that are divorced from any like incentive to do better, and they're being micromanaged by the federal government, and their curriculum is all fucked up now, and it's a disaster.
I agree entirely that the curriculum is all fucked up, but I mean, I don't know if I if we'd agree on like the of the source of why the curriculum is so fucked up, because to me it seems like it's just all this like test taking shit. I mean, I guess that's a part of Common Core, right? Like these testing standards.
Yeah, I mean Common Core. Yeah, Common Core is really bad. Well, and it's forced. So it's changed a lot of schools what they were doing, and now like you were learning algebra, say in seventh grade. Well, now you're going to learn it in ninth grade instead. But we gave you the wrong textbooks because we didn't understand that's what was happening, and then the standardized test is wrong, and it's, you know, giving the algebra exam to the eighth graders. It's just this total sort of debacle, and the Common Core mandated curriculum is like kind of, it's very dry, it's very boring, it's very like, I don't know, I think it'll seem like a stupid idea, even the kind of learning philosophy of it 10 years or 20 years from now.
No, it seems appalling to me, but
I don't like the high stakes testing at all.
Good. This is squashing beef. This is what we do on podcasts. If there's beef to be had, we're gonna squash it on a podcast. That's why we do this show. I think that just give eighth graders the book Dune by Frank Herbert and have them spend like a semester just reading that, and to the exclusion of anything else.
I read not only Dune, but its many sequels when I was.
I stalled out in the middle of Children of Dune.
Yeah, did you read Robin? Did you read Children of Dune?
You missed the best one. God Emperor is my favorite.
Oh man, that's what the GF keeps telling me, Robbie.
I mean, I don't have a girlfriend. I'm
back
Polly.
This broader sort of bird's eye view of this sort of left and libertarian debate. And you were speaking earlier about how and why you think a lot of these issues are better handled at kind of a smaller level. And I hear this a lot that, you know, that the federal government is so big and unwieldy that, you know, things like, you know, justice, education, et cetera, are better handled on a local level. And I got to say,
what is this bullshit? Oh, it's a local level. Guess what? That's still fucking government. And state governments are comically corrupt and incompetent.
Yeah, that's
the
exactly
idea that they have some sort of superiority over a federal government is just, it's kitsch, it's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, I mean, they're far, far more...
It's fetishizing Mayberry. That's nothing to do with reality.
Yeah, I mean, Robbie, I'm from Illinois. You could fire probably fucking all of our state legislators out of a cannon and nothing would happen because two dumb fucks, a family of dumb fucks, Michael Madigan and his daughter Lisa, have been running like most of the entire state into the ground for the last 20 years. Like, it's a fucking step backwards. They're these retarded fiefdoms. More places, more state governments are like this than not.
And this is my point. I think... perhaps not you, Robbie, but I guess like why I'm always skeptical of this line from libertarians is I feel like they want to get these things managed and done at a smaller and smaller levels of government because they're much easier to subvert and control. You know, like if you make these smaller and smaller fiefdoms, then power naturally accrues to the people who are already most wealthy and powerful within those communities or fiefdoms, right?
Yeah, that's. I think that's not always necessarily going to be a bad thing. I mean, if you think that, I mean, the people involved at the more local level, again, this is like a very broad discussion, and I like to focus on specific areas where I think the government is screwing it up. But you're going to have, if you're governing at like a smaller level, the people involved in, you know, controlling or influencing this process are more invested in the outcome, or they know more about how it should be.
Yeah, they're invested in the outcome vis-a-vis their own stake in it, not necessarily any kind of public good.
Yeah, well, okay, so, but here's my example. So the Obama administration is giving, like, all this guidance to schools now relating to Title IX to handle sex equality statute in the higher education law, in the education law more broadly.
And this deals with colleges, right?
It's colleges and K-12. So the same law mandating kind of all these sexual assault hearings in college is also doing kind of the trans student locker room sort of thing happening in K-12. It's all this one sentence statute that very clearly has nothing to do with any of these issues. It just says there has to be sex equality in the funding of education. So now all these schools are going to be trying to like adapt to this sort of kind of like sizable social change that I support. Like, I want them to accommodate trans students, but I want, like, these schools to kind of be able to figure out on their own, and there might be some exceptions, and there might be, well, this is how we're going to handle it, and it'll actually be better. But they're just going to be falling over themselves to comply because they feel threatened by the federal government.
So you mean that – so you're saying that, like, some of the school some school boards and in areas of the country where, you know, the curriculum mandates discussing the nature of Noah's Ark and shit like that are going to be in charge of handling a transition to a trans-inclusive public school system?
Well, then you ought to have a federal, like, an actual federal law that reaffirms people's basic rights to, under the Constitution, to, like, equal services and all of that.
Isn't that what it's from, though? It's Title IX.
Yeah, well, yeah. Isn't that what you just described, though?
But Title IX actually has nothing to do with gender expression. So it's so like this law, they're going to sue over it and probably win because it's clear that this law actually isn't intended to do that at all.
So what is it intended to do?
It's intended to make sure that if you have like a female sports team, they're getting as much funding as they deserve compared to a male sports team.
But now it's also what it's been revised to include these national standards for how.
No, but he's saying that we should have another law. We need another law. That's what he's saying.
Okay,
but that would still be a federal law.
Hey, I'm not saying federal. Like, I'm not saying that federal is always wrong. I of course want the federal government to vigorously protect people if they're violating students' First Amendment rights.
So okay, so you're saying that and you're saying that instead of having a sympathetic Justice Department interpret this thing in a way that that deals with the changing terrain of sexuality in schools, we should leave it to the fucking Bang Hill people mutants of the House of Representatives to pass a law before these people, these kids in these schools, can feel like they actually can go there and feel like they have their rights protected.
So what are you saying? We should just not have a Congress make laws? There should just be like...
I'm saying that there is a law on the fucking books that's being interpreted. And the idea that this is some sort of egregious overreach, and that's absurd to me.
But they're also they're telling schools that they can't, that they have to suspend and expel fewer people. They're suspending and expelling too many people, which I think is probably right in a lot of schools. But in some of these schools, they can't even keep order in the classrooms. The kids are acting crazy. They're like beating up their teachers, and the federal government is telling them, we're going to sue you to death if you don't suspend fewer people. Maybe that's right in some cases. I have a hard time believing there's a lot of schools where that's going to like even make the educational outcomes for the students even worse.
Have you heard of a little place called Rock and Roll High School?
Poverty is making it impossible for public schools to function. And okay, congratulations, you have more local control and you can suspend more kids. Does that do anything to address the underlying issue that why these kids are acting out? No, it doesn't. The idea that it's going to make it some sort of educational fucking Valhalla, that's another goddamn fantasy.
Yeah, but there are kids there who do want to learn, who are getting screwed over because the schools are terrible and there's no order in them and they can't get the benefits of their education.
But the benefits of their education, the thing that could be done to make their education actually worthwhile, the most immediate thing would be to alleviate deep poverty in these areas. And you know what you need to do? You know what you need to do to get that is you need federal fucking action. That's the only thing that's going to make that happen.
Federal action to alleviate poverty.
Yes. I mean, I don't know anybody else's fucking any other mechanism that we have that can actually redistribute in a way that can alleviate poverty.
Well, now we get to the nub of the real disagreement between libertarians and the left is that we are like to administer a program of real, you know, economic and yes, even social justice, in my opinion, would require a program of redistribution of wealth more broadly than it is now.
Because all of this awesome civic freedom that libertarians claim that they want for everybody is not equally accessible to those who don't have the material ability to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not reflexively opposed to poverty alleviation program, to welfare programs, to some means of redistribution, depending what they are. I kind of like the and many libertarians I know like the guaranteed basic income thing.
Right, yeah, but we get a guaranteed income and then we get rid of everything else.
Yeah, I would like the guaranteed basic income in addition to a very robust welfare state and things like, you know, free university education, healthcare, things like that.
I mean, all the college kids I know are using food stamps to buy alcohol, and these are like wealthy college students. So I mean, good for them.
Yeah. Okay.
Who cares?
Like, Robbie, that's such anecdotal bullshit. Like, I could tell you that, you know, that almost everyone I know who works in some management capacity in every company is a fucking idiot and should be liquidated and replaced by government officers. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything from a policy standpoint.
Yeah, no, I mean, like... What
type of people do you know? Like, you know people going to Georgetown. Like, you know, I'm sorry, like, they're probably a bunch of shitheads.
This was at the University of Michigan. Almost everyone I knew was abusing Michigan's bridge card program.
Everyone you knew at the University of Michigan was... was using like the Michigan State SNAP program to get beer.
Yeah.
God damn it.
That's why
it's not good for them, because then they reformed it and they got rid of it, and now like actual poor people don't get it because the fucking rich privileged kids made it look like a joke. So not good.
The problem, like the reason they did away with it is because people hate the idea that their tax money is being spent on food stamps to begin with, and if they can use an example of some rich prick abusing it to buy beer or whatever, then it's all the easier for them to take it away from the people who need it. But, I mean, it's not like the people who need it, like, what they're being given is this, like, ridiculous pittance to begin with. It's not, it's not really helping them. It's just sort of, like, a kind of allowing them to live in poverty just a little bit longer than they actually are. And I think that's the problem with our welfare and food stamp programs in this country, is that they're not nearly generous enough.
I would favor some of these. I would have to evaluate them on an individual, but I'm not reflexively against these things, and a lot of libertarians I know aren't. It's more that we think government management of things like this and other things is often really screws up.
What Reason magazine are you writing for?
Okay, but like, I mean, do you think that the government, like, probably shouldn't be involved with arms procurement because the F-35 is just a bloated fucking $1.35 trillion waste of shit, and all of Northern Virginia is just filled with people stuffing themselves off of government coffers? Like, I don't see this applied to anywhere else.
I do think that. Yeah, I absolutely think that. Yeah, we're...
But, like, how come libertarians, they seem more anxious to just beat up on food stamp recipients than they do defense contractors?
I mean, that's probably, you probably spend a lot of time picking on those kinds of libertarians who make, like, those terrible arguments and seem completely unsympathetic to real people. Just like I, you know, go for the socialist people who say easy to criticize things. I mean, there are
like
all
me.
Asshole libertarians like that, but, you know, there's, my colleagues at Reason, I would say, are we're like very focused on other issues, I think, and we've written.
I saw
Nick,
and, like, free speech violations.
Speaking of which, I saw Nick Gillespie on an airplane, and he was wearing a black shirt, black jeans, black shoes, black sunglasses. He had a black iPhone case and a black bag. Does he ever not do that?
No. Funny enough, even though he believes choice is like the more choices is the greatest liberating force for.
By the way, that's insanely stupid and wrong, but never mind. Continue.
He has decided he chose to never make a choice again about what he wears, and he just wears black.
He's like Einstein. Or he saw Jeff Goldblum in The Fly make that reference to Einstein, and he was like, ah.
Or no, he's like Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn in his videos from 2008 to 2011 only wore his agony shorts. No shirt.
People in poverty get basically no choices. Their lives are determined by their poverty.
Well, shouldn't they want
there's
more?
There's no choices
well, more
involved.
Choices would be good for them. You're saying
yeah, but there's no private sector mechanism that's going to make that possible. There's only the collective action of people who are moving in the face of a market force that gives you a value based on your supposed and totally fictional and arbitrary and largely loaded idea of your value.
No, that's not true at all. And so, like, 500 years ago, you would just live and die in the same village you were born in with, like, very little say over your life. Now more people have more choices, and largely because of private action.
No, come on. None of those things happen in the absence of a fucking government. They're all in it's an inextricable link.
I get to choose what color my iPhone is.
You can't act like, yeah, and like this fucking technology in your iPhone was largely...
That's not a choice.
And the technology, first of all, it's a fucking meaningless, sad choice. Secondly, half the fucking technology in that goddamn iPhone was created by shit from fucking government research. And beyond that, the idea that there's some sort of bright line between these two things is absurd. These markets are created by the fucking government in the first place. The government is what guarantees the ability of people to do all their goddamn trading. It is. It's fucking baked into it. It's baked into it.
We get into which I called earlier, right? That's what you're saying. That the government guarantees that we can own.
It does. It
yeah,
does.
Well, I mean, that's been good. I think.
But what it means is that the distinctions you're making are fundamentally arbitrary.
They're arbitrary based on whether like it's better or not. For the government to be more involved in these specific ways, in these specific areas.
Yeah, but that's just it. You're moving from like a specific thing of the Department of Ballsacks used $100,000 to research people's nut hair color or whatever the hell stupid thing that they always do. But that's different than the broader question of to what these things, what sphere these things belong to. And it just seems to me that it's one big ball. It's one big ball of economic action that's all of which is undergirded by a government and all of which is supposedly and hypothetically at the will of the polity, but which we have created an artificial line between private and public so that we can enrich the private at the expense of everybody else.
Got him.
Well, I think... Yeah, but I mean, I don't disagree with that. But that sort of cooperation between the private and the public is like the exact same is the exact thing I'm criticizing, because that is how the.
But it's inevitable. If you had your minarchist state, the state still exists. But in this case, there's just less input from the fucking proles, and it's like
a
board of directors.
State. I want a more restrained foreign policy. I want. No drug war. I want a reformed criminal justice system. I want a less federally involved education system. I'm just a normal person with normal interests, desire. I don't want to live in Somalia or whatever.
Let's get away from the Somalia argument. But actually, you know, to this point, and this is one thing. On the episode in which I said I hope the National Review and Weekly Standard get run over by a rich man's Ferrari, or I don't know, something like that.
It's going to be ablisted.
we went on to discuss, you know, in the context of this Peter Thiel Gawker case, this weird thing about how Peter Thiel is announced that he's going in September to this conference in Turkey, called the Property and Freedom Society, which is founded by this guy Hans Hermann Hoppe. And I'm just wondering, now you've already said that you don't think Peter Thiel is a libertarian, he supports Trump, but this guy Hans Hermann Hoppe, he considers himself a libertarian and has been, you know, he's on a fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute, he's a high-level academic in this libertarian world, and I'm just wondering if you're familiar with him, and if so, what's your take on the Hans Hermann Hoppe side of libertarianism?
I mean, I'm not especially familiar with him, I know what his side is the Mises people. I mean, there is kind of this is like libertarian insider baseball, but there's a kind of split between sort of the Cato Reason libertarian squad and the Ludwig von Mises Society libertarian people, and they kind of like absolutely loathe each other. So
how does that split break down? Like what's because if we my suspicion is if we had on someone from the Ludwig von Mises Institute. At all of the points in which you said, I basically agree with you, they would vehemently contest.
Yeah, they're more. I mean, they're more focused on, I guess, outreach to a specific kind of conservative.
Nazis? Do you mean Nazis? Because
yes.
That's who's coming to this conference.
Well, there's no accident that these guys like love Donald Trump, and I mean, they're very anti-war. They're like militantly anti-foreign intervention. That's the criticism they would make of like my side of libertarianism.
Well, yeah, they're anti-war in so much as they think that like the war should be waged, you know, at home. Basically, they don't want troops in Iraq because they want it, you know, in the cities of America, you know, purging the undesirables.
Isn't that great? Isn't that great when you're talking to somebody and you agree with them for the first 2 points? But like, we need to get out of NATO. Yeah, we have so many military bases. Yeah, we're wasting rounds that could be spent on the inner city knockout game thug. Wait, what? Okay, man.
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan of any of these thinkers. I mean, I think they're kind of,
well, okay, but so I mean, they would argue that they're taking the notion of sort of the supremacy of private property to its logical conclusion. So why do you say, okay, that's not the logical conclusion?
Well, because I don't really care about philosophical battles over what is property and what is for, these kind of abstract things that don't really matter for actual policy.
Thank God for that, because those conversations are fucking unbearable.
Okay, I got one question then about the Gawker thing then, going back to the original point of all of this. And that is, if you've got an ideal media environment, which would obviously be a private one, right, where media enterprises are all privately held, presumably by people of means, that's why they're able to hold them, would they not then be able to exercise censorship on ideas at their own whim?
Well, they can exercise and always do, I mean, censorship in their own. So, I mean, you wouldn't have on a neo-Nazi, probably. Well, maybe you would. I don't know. There's probably someone you wouldn't.
One of them hosts the show, actually.
I don't know. You wouldn't have on Chelsea Clinton or something. I don't know.
Hell yeah, we would. Hell yeah, bitch.
Yeah, she'd dime.
I wouldn't have her scrub ass husband on the show. Nah. Fuck him.
But my point is, what are you saying? Of course, we exercise some kind of censorship.
I'm saying that a libertarian media environment would have the same issues as the one we have now, where Thiel is able to use the courts to sort of snuff out a thing he didn't like. But what if he just bought Gawker? What's the difference? What's the practical difference? If he just bought Gawker and turned it into, you know, a thing about just
about trains,
a vanity aggregator of stories about ways to like preserve your head in a fucking jar of formaldehyde forever.
Deadspin is now a website about my contributes. I've never actually heard him talk. So he sounds.
I mean, yeah, he could do that. That would be terrible, but I mean, he could do that, and it would not be. My concern is that there would be a legal environment where you could be punished for saying things you should be able to say. If he's just going to do his own thing and punish people, I mean, doesn't threaten the entire world of journalism the same way. I mean, I think what he.
But if every journalistic enterprise is owned by the same group of people with the similar agendas, doesn't that pose a threat?
I mean, yeah, the journalism world is very non-ideal, but I mean, there are more.
But hold on a second. There was a time in the recent past in which there were government regulations that enforced things like monopoly laws, especially when it came to media. But certainly in our lifetimes, over the last, you know, 30, 40 years or so, it's been steadily deregulated, and now there's about 7 companies that control almost every single piece of media that you come across of a day.
Well, at the same time, I have more options for ways to consume news. Than I have more choices. I have more. There are highly specialized websites now that I can get. I have different options just for getting my video game news than I, you know, would have had.
I think the crux of our disagreement here is that I regard those choices as largely specious, and I enjoy them. I enjoy the internet. I enjoy getting, you know, video game news from a variety of different sources. But if it's basically all coming, once you, you know, filter to the top of it, it's all coming from the same funnel, the same five or six funnels controlled by the incredibly wealthy with their own agenda, I don't think it's a really meaningful choice or a meaningful distinction. And if, for instance, we should use the power, and that we should use the power of the state to break up these monopolies.
You think we should use the power
absolutely
of the state to break up these monopolies?
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, but don't you think that would just fail horribly? I mean, that would create some – that could create something. You want Donald Trump, President Trump, with the power to break up media companies he doesn't like? I can tell you how that would go. We'd have one fucking media outlet to read. It would be Breitbart. And you could watch Fox News and read Breitbart all day if we gave the government that power.
I mean,
pause a little bit?
Okay, but does it give
people running our government.
Does it give you pause that we also have crazy people running the media through conglomerates? I mean, what's the fucking difference? It's like, it goes back to the same thing. Like, I can say the exact same thing to you. Do you really want Rupert Murdoch to be making all these decisions for all these entities?
Well, no, but it's different. I can just not watch Fox News. I mean, that would be different than having to be president and then being illegal to not watch Fox News.
Do you really think that, like, Rupert Murdoch's influence over, like, your life or anyone else's life begins and ends with you choosing not to watch Fox News?
What do you mean?
Like, you don't really think that. You don't really think that, like, the fucking influence of a multi-billionaire media mogul who is losing his mind because of Australian genetic weakness and blood that his influence sort of begins and ends with your choice not to consume one of his products.
I mean, it also, his influence also, he has tremendous influence over, like, the policy-making government sphere of things, which I'm also worried about, but what other areas of money?
But he also has a huge influence on the views of your fellow citizens.
Yeah.
Who are making these choices.
Well, if they didn't have the power to, like, run my life, then it wouldn't really matter as much.
But they... he's going to do it then.
But hold on. I want to get back to this idea about trust busting or breaking up media conglomerates. And I said I would think the power... I think this is an example in which more state action and regulation is required. And I want to take issue with what you said, that, you know, if President Trump were to have that power, all we'd be left with is Breitbart. But I disagree. I mean, what I'm saying in terms of breaking up monopoly, it would just sever the control of all these media companies from just one or two people and limit the number of media companies that, like, one group of people can own. So I don't think it would end up with just Breitbart. I think it would just create an actual, I think it would just break up the number of media companies. I don't think it would limit them to just one if the government said you can't own this amount of sort of vertically integrated or just that pervasive level of media in one market. I think just the opposite would happen from what you said about it only having Breitbart or Trump approved news sources be available.
I mean, I think that's, like, the most insanely optimistic case for what would happen if the exact perfect demonopolizing sort of government action that was designed by you, if you had all the power and you did it and it went exactly according to your plan, yeah, maybe it would be great. But we don't live, I mean, we live in the world where the people running the government are insane and they're going to just, like, retaliate against people they don't like because they're
the people running capital are insane too.
I feel safe from their horrible decisions.
Okay, so why though? Because the people who are running the government that are insane are at least technically, as you said to begin with, you're more responsible for them because you vote, you take part in this democracy. Why do you feel more safe from the insane people who run capital, which have even less accountability to you, aside just from these kind of arbitrary consumer...
They're accountable to profit and loss.
The only way they're accountable to you is through these, like I said, I think largely illusory consumer choices that you make.
I think those are more meaningful and they actually are more accountable than, like, the government is to the voters, but...
Really?
Have you ever tried to, like, talk to a private insurance company on the phone?
Do you think Eric Prince is accountable for, like, the massacre in Solder City? Or fucking, you get to a certain level, you are just not accountable.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. That's a problem. I mean, again, I'm not saying these are perfect, like, all heads of business are, like, saintly, wonderful people, and we should trust them with all the authority or anything. But like my concern is that they're going to use the government to make our lives more miserable. Like that's the most horrible thing they can do to us. Isn't it?
I mean, they're making people. Everyone's lives are getting miserable for. Where this breaks down for me is that so when you remove more and more government oversight and power over the private sector, naturally the private sector gains more power. So I don't understand. It's like if you have cancer, kill more of the body. I don't understand why. Again, this distinction between private wealthy interests use the government to get their way. So the answer is we should make the government less powerful so that they would be less, they would have less ability to use the government against people for their own nefarious purposes.
That is exactly my argument. Or that we should have fewer things that the government gets to do and decide if we can, and then we wouldn't have that kind of mechanism taking place. I do fear what Donald Trump would do in charge of the media environment. I fear what Hillary Clinton would do in charge of the media environment. She thinks people shouldn't be able to make documentaries that criticize her. And a lot of the left agrees.
I guess the point is historically speaking, it just seems to me examples of when the rights of the people have been asserted over the few and the powerful. It has been the medium through which that is done has traditionally been a strong federal government in conjunction with popular mass movements.
That's accomplished what? What did you say that's accomplished?
What is essentially accomplished to increase the level of kind of freedom and liberty in the average person's life?
That is definitely
civil rights movement, for example.
Private people are doing that a lot too.
I don't know. We've gone about 15 minutes. Do you think we should? Think we should maybe wrap it up?
Yeah, I'm good.
Robbie, I can't say that we've, completely bridged this divide, but I think we've squashed the beef, I think we've squashed the beef, and that's the most important thing.
I gotta ask one question before we go, though.
Okay, Matt.
How does your readership know that I don't have a headboard?
Oh, yeah. No, this is the last thing we have to bring up.
Yeah, how do those guys know that I fuck in his sleeping bag?
Robbie, I don't know if you saw this. Okay, I don't know if you saw this, but in the comments section.
Okay, no, I did not see it.
Okay, you don't read the comments. Comments section to your original piece about us at the Reason blog, your commenter named Alcibiades. And again, this is a pro tip to all the listeners out there. If you are going to comment on any kind of libertarian or right wing board, definitely mind the classics for your handle because you cannot fail. Commenter Alcibiades at thereason.com said, in response to your article where you quoted us and linked to the show, he said, I have never heard of Will Menaker, Felix Biederman, and Matt Chrisman before, but sight unseen, I would hazard a guess that they all have beards and none of them have headboards. And I want to say, owned, I have a headboard.
I'm getting a headboard soon just so I can fuck it off.
I have never had a headboard, and I will never have a headboard.
One of your commenters was very perceptive in that regard.
I had heard of your podcast before. You have a one of your listeners is a very dear friend of mine from first grade, actually.
Who?
Whom I'm in touch with. Shout out to Tori, who's probably going to be listening to this.
Tori, shout out.
He alerted me. He let me know that he said he did a double take when you said my name.
Oh, I pronounce your name wrong, though. This is a running joke on this show. I pronounce everyone's names wrong, but I do it on purpose.
Will, how do you say my last name?
Baderman.
Okay.
No, and apologies to Rokaya again. I'm so, so sorry. I'll do better.
First of all, what the fuck? Second of all, okay.
Okay. So, Robbie Suave, thanks again for joining us, and thanks again to the eerily prescient powers of your commenters who had us dead to rights.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Robbie.
Cheers.
Have a good one.
It might have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment, so he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. Jumble sales are organized and pamphlets have been posted. Even after closing time, there's still parties to be hosted. You can be active with the activists or sleeping with the sleepers while you're waiting for the great leap forwards. One leap forwards, two leaps back. Will politics get me the sack? Waiting for the great leap forwards. Got a blacklist, I wanna be on it. Waiting for the right leap forward. Well, it's a mighty long way down rock and roll from top of the pops to drawing a thigh. When you're waiting for the right leap forward. If no one out there understands, just start your own revolution and cut out the middle man. Right leap forward. Perfect world, we're all singing tune, but this is reality, so give us a run.
Waiting for the great leap forward.
So join the struggle while you make the revolution, it's just a t-shirt away.
Waiting for the great leap forward. Waiting for the great leap forward. Waiting for the great leap forward. Waiting for the great leap forward.
Bring me up, Scotty!
Would you, sweetheart? Sweetheart, be reasonable. After all, we're married.
Consider that a divorce.